Welcome to SCOTUscast, titled To Indian Lands and Prudential Standing Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On April 24, 2012, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Machibi-Nashuish Band of Potawatomi Indians versus Patchak and Salazar versus Patchak. Both cases consider whether an individual may file suit to challenge the federal government's placement of land into a trust for use by Indian tribes. In Machibi-Nashuish Band of Potawatomi Indians versus Patchak, the court will consider whether the Quiet Title Act's reservation of sovereign immunity in suits involving trusts that restricted Indian lands applies when the plaintiff does not actually claim title to the land in question. In Salazar versus Patchak, the court will consider whether, notwithstanding the Quiet Title Act, the Administrative Procedure Act waives sovereign immunity in a suit challenging the United States' title to lands held in trust for an Indian tribe. In both cases, the court will also face the question of prudential standing, namely, whether the plaintiff can base his standing to sue on an effort to police agency compliance with the law or on interests protected by a statute other than the one on which his suit is based. To discuss these cases, we have Tom Getty, who is a commissioner on the Indian Law and Order Commission and of counsel with Bingham Crutchen LLP. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Getty.
This is Tom Getty. On April 24, 2012, the Supreme Court heard argument in Machibi-Nashuish Band of Potawatomi Indians versus David Patchak, consolidated with Salazar versus Patchak. Both the United States and the tribe argued before the court, as did counsel for the private citizen. This case concerns the challenge of a private individual, Mr. Patchak, to the Department of Interior's decision to take land into trust for the tribe, also known as the Gun Lake Band. As a citizen and neighbor of the land to be taken into trust, Patchak asserted the Secretary's action violates Section 465 of the Indian Reorganization Act, or the IRA, because the band was not under federal jurisdiction in 1934, a condition of the Secretary's power under the Supreme Court's 2009 decision in Carcieri versus Salazar, which is also the subject of my 2009 podcast posted at the Federalist Society. The D.C. Circuit found in Patchak's favor to allow the suit, and the federal government and the tribe appealed. The case presents important questions of federal sovereign immunity and administrative law in two prongs. One is whether the waiver of federal sovereign immunity in the Administrative Procedures Act, or the APA, applies to allow Mr. Patchak's suit as against the bar of sovereign immunity for quiet title actions relating to Indian trust lands under the Federal Quiet Title Act, or QTA. The second prong is whether a citizen such as Mr. Patchak has prudential standing, namely whether he is within the zone of interest of the relevant statute, which may be not only the IRA, but also the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, or IGRA. Indeed, lurking behind the administrative law issues is the reality of a possibility or the probability that the trust land will be used to build a casino. The Solicitor General opened the argument, maintaining citizens are not within the zone of interest Congress intended to cover in the trust land acquisition provision in the IRA, and thus lack the prudential standing to bring suit challenging the action. The justices immediately jumped in with questions to the solicitor asking whether any person affected by the Secretary's action would have standing, and whether the use of the land would be relevant to whether a person would be affected. Obviously, if the property is to be transferred to build a casino, neighbors are going to be affected. The government insisted that because the IRA and regulations allowed a 30-day window of justiciability only for state and local governments, the IRA does not protect and the zone of interest does not reach a mere citizen. The issue is interesting because the court adopted the zone of interest test to limit the implied ability of persons to bring suit under a statute who, while potentially injured by an action taken under the statute, have interests that are unrelated to the statutory prohibitions or who are merely incidental beneficiaries of the statute. This limitation has a general salutary effect on government actions, limiting the potential and potentially vexatious or unnecessary lawsuits it would face. However, the court grappled with the notion that there may be room for persons affected by an action taken under the statute such as this, and there is little question that casinos, generally not legal under state law and local land use and zoning laws, can have serious and degrading effects on the surrounding non-Indian community. Indeed, just having the land transferred from non-Indian land into a tribal sovereign venue may affect the non-Indian community sufficiently to raise prudential standing. Justice Kagan said, look, quote, the government doesn't acquire this land with no object in mind. It thinks about how the land is going to be used, close quote, much like a land use statute, leading to questions about the impact and effect this would have. The Solicitor General brushed off the affected citizens as bystanders outside of the zone of interest. Justice Scalia questioned this, noting, quote, it doesn't have to be within the interest, it just has to be arguably within the interest, close quote. Justice Breyer was also active in questioning the federal government on its reliance on the quiet title bar of immunity, immunity invoked at the moment of actual taking of the land in a trust. Justice Breyer asked, quote, why are we considering quiet title? What does that have to do with this, close quote, noting it is an APA claim. Of course, Justice Breyer often does not give away his thinking as much as test theories, but his line of questioning points to the argument that Patrick's suit did not seek to divest the United States of title to land, only to prevent the government from acquiring it in the first place, which may portend his view that the quiet title provisions ought not bar the Patrick claim. It is obviously complicated by the fact that the title here was transferred. Can it be undone? Justice Scalia pursued the same, and skeptical, line of questioning to counsel for the tribe, pressing along with Justice Kagan the point that the immunity bar in the Quiet Title Act is under a section relating to a plaintiff's claim of right, title, or interest in the land, which Patrick does not claim. Counsel for Mr. Patrick fared no better in avoiding tough questions, and while pursuing a line that this is strictly an APA case, got himself sandwiched with the position that Patrick could conceivably have waited to file within the APA's 6-year statute of limitations. The justices rescued him, suggesting he really didn't mean he could wait that long. Justice Breyer again seemed to find the solution, which he articulated out loud. Quote, the obvious answer, which isn't obvious at all, the answer is a proper APA suit if you bring it before they take it. And if you bring it after they take it, it's a quiet title action, close quote. Whether Justice Breyer is thinking out loud on his own, is reflecting on what his colleagues are thinking, or is trying to forge some compromise on the matter, remains to be seen. While it is hard to predict an outcome, it seems the court is willing to consider a zone of interest test that is wider than the narrowly constrained view of the federal government and the tribe. The government and the tribe may well have overplayed the notion that only the state and local governments, which admittedly would lose sovereignty and taxes when the land is transferred to the tribe, are within the zone of interests. After all, the interests of citizens and neighbors are not much different. As for the seeming conflict between the APA and the QTA, it also seems ripe for a compromise that might provide some certainty about when a plaintiff should file and whether the suit could survive the Secretary's final action of taking land into trust. My bet is the court will allow citizen plaintiffs a way through all this.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.